Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and for our panel discussion this morning on the day before St. Patrick's Day. It's the 16th of March. It's a Friday. Thank God it's Friday, because I don't know that my voice could last another day. But I will say we have a great panel, so I will do as little talking as possible, not to hurt your nails going down on a chalkboard.
It sounds good. You got the whole FM thing going on.
Yeah, good morning. Two for good Tuesday. Morning. Yeah, good morning.
Here on the mighty 102.7.
Got the hangover voice.
Power 92.3. Favorites of yesterday and today. Good morning. Welcome. Let me introduce the
panel. Speaking of which, let me just say that I just heard from somebody that your voice was named the best voice on radio. And what a better time! What a better time to tell you than right now that we have the best voice on radio.
Yeah, that's great. Clearly, the judges were not listening. That was nice. And we got best radio station, which is awesome.
Do we know who did it?
Capital District Living Magazine, from what I understand, and they have a thing called Besties.
Yep.
Yeah. So. Mm. And I would admit I would know about none of this if it wasn't for Teresa Bourgeois, who sent it to me. So there you go.
The all-knowing Teresa Bourgeois.
Yeah, exactly.
From the Middle East.
Yeah.
Down in the weeds.
All right. So let me introduce our panel to you. We have Rich Onan. He's a corporate attorney by day. We don't know what he does at night. And it's very nice to have you with us, as always.
What do you do by night?
He's a cop by night.
Good to have you.
I won't share what I do by night.
We don't know what this man does by day or night because he was a spy. Malcolm Nance is with us. He's a counterterrorism expert. He is an author, a best-selling author, and he's also a commentator for MSNBC. We are thrilled that he joins us. And good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Glad to be home.
Really wonderful to have you back. And Judith Enck is here. Judith Enck is the former EPA Administrator for Region 2. She joins us each and every Friday. As I mentioned, it's Friday. She is here, and we are thrilled. Good morning. How
good
are
morning.
You?
Good morning. I hope this doesn't ruin your St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you me gotta, too. Like, get better in
you
12
can,
hours.
Well, you all kinds of things you can put in your
yes,
tea.
Yes, true. But we want you to get better.
Old Jameson in the tea won't hurt. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. You're look at you, bright red shirt. You look great.
Yeah. So I'm really enjoying all the news this morning. I have a unique theory, by the way, that nobody else seems to be sharing, which is that all of these firings by the president is getting everybody ready for his firing the attorney general in order to get at Mueller, which I believe he must do. Not from my perspective. I don't like the guy and I don't like what he's doing. But I think if everybody else goes first, now remember that the Republicans in the United States Senate said, we're never going to permit that. We'll never permit that. And now, all of a sudden, there's real silence on that subject. Because these people want to maintain their offices, and they don't want to go away. They don't want to be primaried by Trump. They're between a rock and a hard place, and I don't see them getting in the way. And I think, knowing Trump and knowing how the circle is tightening here, that he has got, in his own mind, to fire Mueller. And what I love about Mueller in all of this is he's got the brightest people. I want to hear from Malcolm on this, but he's got the brightest people in the world around him. So they must be gaming this like crazy, you know, sort of structuring. If he does this, then I'll do this. If they do that, then we'll do that, because he's not going to slink off like Comey did. He's got something planned, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think this is the legal version of the Untouchables,
yeah.
Right? You know, you got Sean Connery suggesting, you know, they take a slap at you here, you hit them with a nightstick. They come at you and fire the deputy attorney general. You send out an indictment against the White House. This is going to be fascinating because it is really, I think it's lightweight boxing in the sense that, again, I've said this many times before, Trump thinks he's dealing with some deputy assistant district attorney in southern New York City.
Yeah.
And he thinks that he can play mayor. He has no clue what he's up against. These people are out for blood. They are the top professionals in this field. And now we remember we said very early on that he had hired 16 of the top money laundering prosecutors in America. First guy, first day he hired was the man that took down Enron.
Weissman.
Right? Mm-hmm. So this man knows what he's doing. And so if they think that they can get away with political machinations to take down a legal team like this, this is murderer's row. These guys are just going to go to town.
So let's
How can they?
Let's just go through a brief, just so everybody's on the same page as to what has happened over the last 24 hours of what we're talking about.
Oh,
so
did something happen?
Yeah, believe it or not. So the shocking, I know. The news yesterday came out that Robert Mueller had subpoenaed the Trump Organization, which I think earlier in an interview with the New York Times, Donald Trump had said, when I say earlier, several months ago, that that would be a red line in the sand. But, you know, I think that's also before all these other stories came out that he was going to fire Mueller and that he was already in with the people saying don't do that. And then we had the news late in the day, which I think a lot of us expected, but that it's pretty much a done deal on H.R. McMaster. He will be fired. And now they're just looking for a replacement. And once that's in, then McMaster will be gone. And so I don't know when you look at this story as these two stories together, as Alan posited at the beginning of one being a distraction on the other, but if anything, also it shows just the utter chaos that's going on, certainly this week in the White House.
It certainly feels like this is the most unstable time in the Trump presidency, and there have been many. But remember, it has to come in steps. I mean, I've observed a few months ago that if the attorney general is replaced, then you have an attorney general who doesn't have to recuse himself or herself, assuming that someone would want to take the job. And then you'd have to it's really up to Rod Rosenstein to decide whether or not to fire Mueller, presumably.
And he'll fire him.
Yeah, presumably he would say no. He would get fired. And then remember, the third in line, Rachel Brand, hightailed it out of there to go work for Walmart as their general counsel rather than being part of this mess. So there are a couple steps. I don't think it can happen in 24 hours. And so, Alan, to your point, what, if anything, will the Congress do? They'll have a couple, you know, it's like the Wizard of Oz and you stop at the different locations along the way. They'll have a few opportunities to stand up as this unravels.
Well, I don't know. I don't have much faith in them. But let's assume for a second that they want to do something. One thing they can do is they're going to say, we're not approving any attorney general you bring up here.
Except, I think Trump anticipates that, and he has floated the idea. He hasn't. Scott Pruitt, the head of the EPA, floated himself the idea that he could be appointed because he's already gone through a confirmation process. But that was for a different position. And yesterday, Chief of Staff Kelly called Pruitt and said, don't get your hopes up. But there are, you know, the vultures are circling the body of the attorney general ready to present.
So let me ask both of you guys, and Rich, if he wants to chime in on the conservative, you know, right-wing side. What are his choices right now? What are Trump's real choices? He either has to get rid of this guy who is going forward, or he's got to suffer the consequences of what's going to happen.
Well, both, right? I mean, he's going to suffer the consequences. So, and what are those consequences? I mean, is that itself obstruction of justice? How is that? Isn't this worse than what he did with Comey? Well, you
know, yeah, but he didn't learn the lesson of Comey. I mean,
Nixon.
Or Dick, what did I say? The man's been reading all the president's men, and he thought it was an owner's manual. He thinks that this is what he's supposed to do. Last year, I believe in June, he floated the idea of having Sessions fire Mueller. And just the rumor of it created such a congressional firestorm that he backed off and denied.
How come Sessions backed out?
I think Sessions is starting to finally understand.
No, I don't mean now.
Oh,
I mean
when he recused himself.
When he recused himself, I think he's involved in some way, and he realizes if he doesn't get his tail clean, as we say in the intelligence world, someone will clean it for him. and that person is Mueller. And
well, if, well, there's also
a visual.
There's a Department of Justice rule
Birdtail.
That if you're involved in something, you cannot then be involved in the investigation. And
correct.
Sessions was involved in the campaign. So Trump's mad at him, but Sessions had no choice rather than
because Sessions was playing by the
out.
Established rules that have been
the norms.
That have, the norms which have led this nation forever.
Silly
and Trump
Bruce.
Was upset that those norms were being upheld. He you know, like I said, he thinks he's God, and he wanted Sessions to do his bidding, and he doesn't understand that the Attorney General does not work for the White House. And I think Sessions, this last few weeks, has only figured that out himself. Maybe he watched one of the documentaries or spoke to a former Attorney General and realized that he can be independent of
well,
the president.
Well, Malcolm, far be it from me to disagree with anything you say,
because
we are truly so much smarter than I am. But no, you are. But it
Malcolm
seems,
just spit out his coffee.
But it does seem to me that that Sessions had to know. He had to know that something he had done was going to be brought up later on. Yeah. And he and by the way, he does work for the White House. I mean, I know you don't think so, but the truth is the president. That's right. But the president could fire him, and he knows that. Yet he's. He's a little guy, but like me, but he has stood tall.
Rich Honan, we've been people across the table have been painting a dire picture. What do you make of it?
You guys spend a lot of time talking about scenarios that you think might happen, but have shown no signs of happening. I would also say, you know, if you read the article, one of today's articles where they talk about the president firing, wanting to fire Mueller. If you actually read the article is based upon, I counted it. It's three-part hearsay, basically. In the article, it says that allegedly the president said something to his lawyer, and then four people allegedly reported that conversation, and that was allegedly reported to the Post, and the Post then printed it. I don't know why. I don't understand the connection between you have to get rid of Sessions to get rid of Mueller. I think it's going to go the other way.
You do,
because Sessions recused himself, and if you replace Sessions with an AG who's not recused, that AG will then do the bidding.
No, I think what Rich is saying, whether he recuses himself or not.
I need clarification from you. So when you say in the firing of Mueller, are you talking about in recent days, or are you talking about what we learned in January when
he went to the special counsel? No, Alan started with the proposition that you have to get rid of you have to fire Sessions to get to the end game of firing Mueller.
That's the conventional wisdom.
First of all, first of all, no one's going to fire Mueller. Second,
he already tried to fire Mueller.
No, who said that?
The special counsel.
It was
Don McGahn.
Don McGahn said that?
Don McGahn said that he would resign.
McGahn, there is a statement of Don McGahn saying that. There is not. Multiple sources have reported that somebody allegedly said to McGahn something, and he allegedly said something. Four people, none of who are named, are mentioned in the article, and then the article gets published.
You know, in my business, multiple sources up to four is considered high confidence. That's 90 to 100% confidence in an assessment. We kill people at 75% confidence.
And I hate it when you say that.
But
this is Washington.
And you guys led us into the, wherever we have led.
No.
But go ahead.
But this is Washington these days, because you don't have like a press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, standing at the podium telling the truth and answering questions. And so with the New York Times and the Washington Post that have very good reputation,
that's right.
Are required to do is talk to multiple people who are in positions of authority. And I think there was a story last night from the Post where they said they had 19 people, all off the record, to your point,
all off the record.
Confirming.
And I'll tell you something. The people who speak off the record are not the high-level people.
They've been wrong on everything so far.
They said Sessions was going to be fired. He hasn't been fired. They said Mueller was going to be fired.
He hasn't been fired.
And what about everybody else who's walked out of the White House?
No one was surprised when Tillerson got fired.
Well, that's okay,
been reported
for months.
Wait a second.
That's been openly talked about.
Okay, we only have a minute, but go ahead.
Yeah, Judith mentioned the word Post. We want to make it clear this Washington, is the Washington Post with a huge reputation. The other guys, I wouldn't care.
I agree, they have a huge reputation.
People, you know,
yes, Washington Post, New York Times, not New York Post.
Well, yeah. You know, in the good old days, it was only two sources that were required to verify a story. The Post and the Times and everyone else now understands in this administration, you've got to get 10, 15 sources. And the best part is they're all talking. That rumor, that story that we heard last year did not come from some low-level staffer. It came from Reince Priebus, came from Jeff Sessions and their immediate friends.
On the record?
No one's on the record in this White House.
And who was Deep Throat again? These are insignificant, according to Rich. You know, only the deputy director,
of the FBI. Who would know, right?
Steve Bannon is the
biggest leaker in this White House.
We don't know that. And the Post at that time, back in the Nixon days, went through way more efforts to make sure they had real sources.
It turned out they did. There's an actual movie on it.
And how do we know that?
It's the owner's manual for the White House. I'll wait on this question.
I'll wait for the answer anyway. But I do have the question is, with all of that aside, if he were to fire Sessions, if he were to fire Mueller, then what would you say?
Then I'd say that I think it would be ill-advised. Firing Mueller, I think, would be ill-advised.
10 seconds.
Firing Sessions, I mean, the guy's been a disaster since day one.
All right.
Period.
I'm going to hold you there. We'll come back. We have a lot more talking to do at and around Rich. We'll be back right after this. Listening to the Huckleberries this morning, great music to get us in and out of our breaks. It's what we like to think of as the ray of sunshine in the program. Something that perhaps can lift your spirits before we dash them with all of the news of the day.
There's nothing better than banjo music.
No, I agree with you, Alan. You're absolutely right.
Don't forget the accordion.
Yes.
All right. We have a fistful of letters. Was that the movie you were watching earlier? What was it? You don't know.
I was watching on the Channel 58, you know, on the classic movie channel.
Yeah.
About an old guy who was being pushed out of his office. He had a beautiful young daughter. Then another guy comes in and who was expected to fail. And he goes out with the daughter. The old man's on their side. The two guys, the anti-heroes are the two guys who are really running the company. Well, that's all I know because I couldn't see the rest of it because you guys made me come in here.
Dang you, Turner Classic Movies.
Sounds like the Trump family.
Oh, there won't be a disaster.
The guys are running the company and the guy's getting driven out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Although one of the guys is going to lose half the company here in a couple of weeks.
Right. And Eric will be running it.
That's right. All right.
Five children. Okay, here we go. John says, new moderator. Is that John Wayne of Johnny Cash sitting in for Joe today?
Nice.
Yeah.
Classic.
Okay. And Joseph says, the knives are out for Deputy AG Rosenstein, a rolling coup. Yeah. Minutes after the New York Times report that special counsel Robert Mueller had subpoenaed documents from the Trump Organization, Fox News turned to its chief intelligence, in quotes, correspondent, Catherine Herridge, who acknowledged that she had already spoken to Trump's lawyers about the report. She then leveled harsh criticism of Deputy AG Rod Rosenstein. Well, that's been going on for a long time, right?
Yeah. Rachel Brand left for a reason.
Yeah. Okay, and Jerome says, War Cabinet, Bolton to replace McMaster. Whoa. This guy Bolton, he's a damaged goods from the last time he made an appearance.
John Bolton?
Yeah.
Okay, now, everyone listen.
Okay, we're listening.
Old Yosemite Sam there, John Bolton is a very serious threat to this nation's democracy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is a warmonger extraordinaire. I've spent my entire life in intelligence and in combat operations. You let a guy like that near the National Security Council, he has been an advocate for open war with Iran for the last 20 years. I mean, he is seriously, I don't know whether he's just unhinged or he just thinks that that's going to validate him in some way, shape, or form, but that guy should not be near any level of power in the United States government.
Well, he met with President Trump last week. And remember, he tried
Trump
to get this.
Trump doesn't like his beard, but mustache.
Yeah, the mustache, right. Let's Thank hope God. That's what stands in the way. But remember, Bolton tried to get it the first time. And remember, McMaster replaced Flynn. So right, this will be our third national security advisor. And I think Bolton, I mean, the news of a potential Bolton appointee is by far the worst news of the week, if that comes
so
to
pass.
So
what's the one thing, Judith and gang, who which would take our eyes off of what's going on with Mueller? The one thing is war. Wag the dog.
That's not going to help him. I'm sorry to say.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah. You know, everyone knows that this dog is being wagged. Remember the first time?
No, Rich doesn't know that.
When Bill Clinton had identified al-Qaeda's headquarters in Afghanistan, the Zawahiri Terrorist Training Center, and at the urging of the Defense Department, put 75 cruise missiles into it. It just happened to be on the same day that Monica Lewinsky information had come out. I guess the blue dress had come out. And we always said, wow, that's wag the dog. This will be, I don't even know if you can call it wagging the dog. This is manufacturing a dog and then wagging it. If we go into any conflict whatsoever that is not a sneak attack on us.
So can we talk for a second about H.R. McMaster?
HR,
so
what? No. The number one question is, of course, what does H.R. stand for? Do we know?
I'll find out.
Harold.
So what happened? Harry? What happened there?
Yeah,
what,
how bad is your name that you have to go by H.R.? Right?
Right. Human resources.
I signed my articles at the Hunter College Arrow, A. Seth. Very pretentious.
Okay. So my question about H.R. McMaster.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, it was reported that the president didn't like the way
he talks too much.
He briefed him,
yeah,
and maybe a little too technical.
Yeah.
And all, but more importantly, McMaster is a combat veteran.
Yes.
He's not a sycophant,
right,
and he was not afraid to tell the president that he's wrong on some things, and Trump doesn't want that.
Interesting point about McMaster. He's an active duty general.
That's right.
He was ordered into that job. There was no you'll take it or you won't take it. He actually will be reassigned back to the Pentagon.
Army, correct?
When this is done. Army.
Three stars, right?
Believe me, at this point in his career, I mean, he doesn't want to have anything other than a nice retirement, I'm certain.
Herbert Raymond.
Better than Herb.
But the key point
now
is,
I get it.
The national security advisor really is the point man for how the United States is going to deal with the world from a security perspective. And Donald Trump comes up with wild fantasies, including the parade and things, and he expects them to be orders to be carried out. The position actually has the life and death of our servicemen and women, American citizens overseas, and sets the policy and how we will confront other nations. McMaster, I don't know whether he finally read his own book, in which he wrote it during the Vietnam War, how generals were supposed to stand up to and confront civilian power when unlawful orders were given. Mm. But it appears in the last month, he's just decided, you know, he's going to start listening to his conscience and not Donald Trump.
And so he and Tillerson were pals, right?
Yes.
I mean, right.
They were talking
back
and forth. And Mattis.
Now, 11 hours ago, Sarah Huckabee Sanders tweeted out that she spoke to President Trump. She spoke to H.R. McMaster. And contrary to press reports, they have a good working relationship and there are no changes at the—
Yeah, oh, my God. That's the kiss
NSC.
Of death.
Yeah, that means
statement.
He's gone.
He's gone.
Yeah,
ding,
so that means
they have said that
desk,
before.
Right?
Yeah. Every firing, they've said that. Every firing.
But my favorite is that they are saying, the president is saying, I want to do it right. I don't want to embarrass McMaster by swinging him.
Well, you've already done that.
He's currently embarrassing him.
The easiest way for him to do it is to give him a combatant command somewhere in the world, like Central Command or Pacific Command, and then rotate him out of that job.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back to the letters, if we could.
Oh, please do, Joe. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Paul said, National Infrastructure Security Panel. After Russian cyber bears refined their ability to attack the power grid in Ukraine through the sandworm with Black Energy 3 malware. They are in our pocket grid right now. Infrastructure security must be the top priority. Please discuss. And that's from Paul.
Someone has read Plot to Hack America.
That's right. That's a great book. That is a wonderful book.
Word for word about the Black Energy 3 virus.
Good, because I understand. I stood like 8 words in that sentence. So you tell me.
The Ukraine was attacked in December 2015.
Domestically. No, but domestically it's been going on.
Right. But in this particular instance, the Ukraine was attacked in December 2015 using a re-engineered malware called Black Energy 3, where they seized control of 2 power plants from Russia, literally shut them down. The controllers couldn't do anything, took out power for 300,000 people. And showed that they have the ability to shut off your energy infrastructure at the flick of a switch. And he's saying we should do something about that. Absolutely right.
Yeah, well, there's also people, aren't there? There's people actually out shooting in California, right? There's teams of people,
substation,
yeah, like shooting at electrical substation. It's unbelievable, and that's been going on. That's years old.
And in fact, the Iranians were test betting. Taking control, Iranian intelligence tried to take control of a sluiceway at a dam in Washington State. Yeah. And they were just doing it to test to see whether they can control infrastructure systems. It's a national emergency that we have right now in cyber infrastructure.
I want to talk about this issue. We'll finish up with these letters, but I want to get to this issue about our power grid, where we are, and get the perspective from everybody here, but especially Malcolm and Judith. So we'll hold on that for a second.
Especially not me and Rich.
Well, no, because I know obviously Judith has great interest in this in the power grid, and obviously Malcolm knows a lot about what Russia's up to. So let's go with the letters, and then we'll come back and do those.
Okay, Joe and Tom from Bonneville. Trump will do what Trump does. He will double down. He will lie, cherry pick the facts, and he will fire anyone and everyone who is an existential threat to him. Let's be clear. He will fire Mueller. And that's from Tom. I happen to agree with him.
You wrote that.
I don't happen to agree.
Yeah, no, you've checked in on that.
And I hope you're right, because no one wants Mueller fired.
Yeah, I hope you're right.
Well, I mean, in the studio, Trump and many other people do. But, boy, what a constitutional crisis.
How so? Everybody's talking about constitutional crisis. What does that mean?
What does it mean? I don't think that actually produces a constitutional crisis.
Oh,
it would have to be a crisis Congress where Congress and Senate, the House and Senate, as you were just saying, won't stand for
right.
it. We already know the House of Representatives will stand for anything at this point.
Right. Well, and we already know that there has been just such a test when the Congress voted overwhelmingly to deprive money in terms of the Russian adventure. And the president hasn't spent a cent of it.
Yep. Well,
right.
That's a constitutional crisis.
And that was a Tillerson criticism. Well, we do have checks and balances, and it doesn't seem to be working in this instance until perhaps maybe the midterm elections, where if the Democrats take control of the House, they will start exercising some proper oversight authority.
No, then it'll get interesting.
Then you'll have a constitutional crisis.
All right. Go. Actually, let's hold there, Alan. Let's take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll get to more letters. We have Alan Chartok, Judith Eng, Malcolm Nance, Rich Honan. We have your letters panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation right after this. Like a Tolstoy novel, at the left-hand side, I have have Malcolm and Rich talking about war, and then over here, I have these two talking about peace. So it's very nice. I like the separate conversations going on during the break. Welcome. We have a lot. We have some letters to get to. We're going to get to those, and then we're going to move on to this PowerPoint issue.
Okay, here comes Lore. Or Lori, do you think that Devin Nunes would just love to be attorney general? He would say he would obey Trump's every whim. Can Malcolm and others comment on the death of Nikolai Glushov in London last week?
Yeah, there's all sorts of people dying. Glushov is a guy who was was a Russian dissident who was associated with Boris Berezovsky, another dissident who ended up dead in due to quote-unquote hanging while he was in London. This guy, they believe, was strangled.
Which is almost always fatal.
Let me tell you right now, there's a campaign going on where England, as a platform for dissidents, Russian intelligence is out killing people. Mm. And there, it exceeds now over 25 people there are suspicious deaths of. Yeah. The Brits are opening investigations into 14 new ones.
And the BBC this morning told me something I had not known. It's one of those interstitial things that pass in the night and sometimes nobody ever hears about it again. But that the Russian Duma, or whatever they're calling it now, had passed a bill which basically said, in our terms of our national security, it's okay for us to go and kill people in foreign countries.
Wow. What? God, now I got to re-edit a chapter. I'm literally writing a book on this. Yeah. Every day there's something new.
There are so many things you hear on the Beeb in the morning.
Yeah.
And you just don't really know. And then you
and
never.
We, and we don't hear that.
And then never you never hear
domestic
them.
Domestic reporting.
Again.
Mm. Note like, to no.
I love the BBC.
All right. More letters.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Fake news. Rich needs to stop criticizing long-held practices of journalism, namely off-the-record sourcing. The president is a news-creating behemoth. The Post does not need to make up stories to create content. It's on the table every other tweet, and that's Nuala in Goshen. But let me answer that.
Off-the-record sourcing has been used historically to buttress or to add color. But it has never been the norm that off-the-record sourcing forms the sole basis for stories that go on for months and months in the news cycle.
Well, I want to bring you back. Let's go back to Nixon.
Forget that. Sally Hemings and Jefferson. That was a story in the run-up to his election. That was unsourced. I mean, come on. This is in the beginning of time. This is the, for someone to suddenly have this fantasy that that was never the way media was, that in itself is part of the problem.
But I understand Rich's point, but I also think, Rich, you've got to acknowledge that the Trump administration has a real problem providing timely and accurate information to working reporters
Truthful.
Who are credible.
Timely and accurate information.
Yeah.
I got severely criticized.
I would say that for every administration.
Oh,
I'd say that. Oh,
no,
of course, I can't say that.
Nothing like
that.
Like
say
the Obama administration? The most opaque administration we've had in the last 30 years?
Nothing.
We're only
like
now learning about things.
Sean Spicer,
we are now learning
Scaramucci.
About things in the Obama administration that we never heard about before. Things like the FISA abuses, things like...
Because they don't exist. I mean, man, you live in a different bubble than the rest of us.
The FISA That's abuses sure. do not exist.
You
no, there were no
judge.
FISA abuses.
So you think it's okay to go to a judge and present them with a 60-page affidavit and not point out that where your sourcing came from? You think that's fine. That doesn't work in any other court in the history of America, but that's fine in a FISA court.
Okay, Rich.
And you're
and
the one
only
who...
the Obama administration that would do that.
Okay,
the
Rich.
Same Justice Department that got censured so many times by
federal
judges.
I know I'm sent here monthly at the very least to educate you in intelligence processes. So
I don't
let
think
me
that's
do
why you're
hey,
here.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
I think
you
I'm
had your chance.
Enough.
Let
if
him
you
have,
have
his
your
chance.
Opinion, you can have your opinion.
It isn't an opinion.
I came here educated enough.
I'm
wait,
the guy
wait.
Who provides the information to FISAs. Okay, it's usually a collection of a clandestine or covert source or a signals intelligence-based source. That information that goes to that court, the court gets every raw piece of documentation in there. It ain't 60 pages. It's usually 400, 500, 1,000 pages.
Exactly
they
right.
They read the actual transcripts of whatever's going on. They get all of that data, and then the judges, most of whom are Republican-appointed, make a decision one way or the other. Go search for additional information on that person. Here's your warrant. Here's not. That's not abuse. 99.9% of these are counterterrorism and intelligence
I agree
against
with that.
Threats to the United States. These judges allow that information, those warrants to go forward so that the investigatory bodies of the United States can hunt out our threats. Now, those threats just happen to be based in Russia and involve American citizens. You're unhappy with that? That ain't abuse.
And
that's
but
the
I'm
but,
not
whoa,
unhappy
whoa, whoa,
with
everybody
that.
Gets
what
a
I will say is that everybody that it is the duty of you get a chance. It's the duty of any attorney that is presenting something to a judge, especially on an ex parte basis, on a basis where you're the only party, that to point out somewhere in those 400 or 800 or 1,000 pages something that the judge should know. And like, that was
Rich,
not
like
done
what?
Here.
Rich, who gave us the FISA courts again?
I don't agree with the FISA courts in the first place, nor do I agree with the Department of Homeland Security in the first place. Okay, I don't think they were. I think they were responses to an attack. It's not something I would have done, but I understand that's where we are.
There's no abuse here. It's a warrant under the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution, a legitimate authorized warrant against intelligence threats or counterterrorism threats to this nation. And now suddenly you don't like it. You liked it when Al-Qaeda and ISIS were being rolled up.
Because they were threats to the country.
But
you don't like it when you're investigating a political opponent, which has never been done in the history of that court except under that administration. You guys are telling me how transparent it was.
We have never in the history of the United States had an administration which was involved with Russian spies. And now we have, they're getting investigated.
Except for every other administration, and except for the fact that it was the Obama administration that started this trumped up charge that they still haven't found anything about. Okay? Everybody has conversations with the Russians. We had the conversation about Obama sending his person over to actually talk to people in Moscow.
Wait. So you are saying now, Rich, I want to make sure that I got the chutzpah factor correct here. You are saying now Obama is responsible for all our problems with the Russians right now? Even the president.
First of all, I think the Russians are responsible for our problems with the Russians. I think that the lack of response emboldened them in many ways. And I actually think the Obama administration probably reacted correctly to the so-called Russian meddling because it didn't mean anything. And the Obama administration correctly said this is not a big deal. When their candidate lost that suddenly it meant something.
All right, well, let's go to the person who was in the Obama administration.
Right. Yeah. I think the Obama administration was very concerned. They did not want to appear to be meddling in the presidential election between Trump and Clinton. So they went to the Congress and they wanted a bipartisan approach to deal with it. And Mitch McConnell refused to participate in a bipartisan approach. And I think it is a valid point that perhaps the Obama administration could have been more aggressive last fall, but they didn't want to put their finger on the scale of an election.
It wasn't important enough because it wasn't making a difference.
But they also went to the incoming administration and told them what was going on. Right.
Let me make one last point on this. From what I understand, your contention here, Rich, is that you're sort of upset that the nation's spy hunters are doing their job.
I want the spy hunters to do their job.
Was the spy hunters doing their job?
Oh, stop
bottom
it.
Line.
That FISA warrant.
When they issued warrants to hunt down Aldrich Ames, when they issued warrants to hunt down other internal domestic threats to try to go after Edward Snowden, no one has a problem.
Because this they were no, real threats.
Don't be hanging out with Russian spies. You won't get the spy hunters.
I like
butt.
It. Don't
no,
be hanging
stop
out.
It. No, don't oppose a Democratic administration and you won't get a FISA warrant against
don't
you.
Don't be. No. Spy hunters going to hunt.
Joe, do something.
All right. Now, I have to say the last time you two were together and you were doing this, going back and forth, and I was worried, you know, that you were, I don't know what you were going to do in the hallway when you left, and I went out and the two of you were making dinner plans.
You're not going to get in a fight with a guy who could kill me with a Post-it.
My invitation must have gotten lost in the mail.
None of us were invited. These two have to work out their issues.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you ready?
I was actually going to bid on that dinner.
Are you ready?
Yeah, we're ready. Go
you're
ahead.
The only one in the room who could afford it. Okay, so.
No good deed.
Yeah. Well, that is very sad and very true.
Here we go. the firing. Now, I got severely criticized in the mail, M-A-I-L, yesterday.
Yes.
Because I had been saying good morning, panel, and then encouraging everybody to go, good morning, good morning, good morning.
Yeah, we don't like doing that.
Stop wasting our time.
I agree.
This person. Yeah. I don't agree. I think,
no,
there's,
I think
a certain,
it's fun.
Gentility in the, there's a certain gentility in the,
there's population. A blanket good morning and good cheer to everyone. No,
yes. I do like, well, but when people say like esteemed panel, I think you would.
Okay,
well,
okay.
You.
Yeah, maybe you're all right.
That
I don't,
means
I, they're
I don't
know.
Drinking.
Okay, I'm going to try it. Here we go. The
Nothing
firing.
Wrong with that.
I'm sorry. Good morning, panel.
How do you think I get through this thing? Go ahead.
Okay, Rich, perhaps you have not noticed, but in the style of The Apprentice, this POTUS has been firing people constantly. You believe firing Sessions or Mueller is a stretch? That's for Maureen.
No, I think he should have fired Sessions, but I think he can't do it now, and I don't think he should or will fire Mueller.
You know, the one firing that got virtually no coverage this week, understandably, is when Rex Tillerson was fired. Tillerson was not going along with the story that he got a call on Friday, and this was right. collaborative. And so the deputy secretary
and
of state
he got fired too.
Put out an honest statement saying what really happened, and then he got fired. Yeah. And then the person who's now number four at the State Department is a former Fox News commentator.
Yeah.
That is just so dreadful for the State Department.
Yeah,
well, but I think the fact that a spokesperson gets fired for telling the truth is disturbing. The ICE spokesperson in San Francisco wouldn't lie, so he stepped down.
And by the way, in the very
take your microphone there.
I was hiccuping. That's
yeah,
what I'm
that's right. All right.
But the very firing of all these people and Trump saying, "Well, I'm going to finally get the cabinet that I want."
It's his cabinet.
It is his cabinet. He put all of those people in there, right. And now he wants to fire them.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to get to. I promise we'll get to the power grid story and much more. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable to our panel discussion. This morning we have Alan Chartok, Judith Henk, Malcolm Nance, and Rich Honan. And we got a photo op going on in the studio. I think it's being done just to prove that everybody loves each other, which of course they do. But
hugs and kisses.
There, yeah, that's right. Very nice. You all look great.
Back to Thunderdome.
Yeah, nobody took a picture of this with the sick guy.
nothing personal, Joe. Yeah, but no. We don't want you in our space.
Nobody got near me. All right, we're back. Let's move on to this issue, and then we'll get to some letters in just a second. We want to talk about the power plant cyber attacks and what is happening here. Cyber attacks put Russian fingers on the switch at power plants, according to the U.S. The Trump administration accused Russia on Thursday of engineering a series of cyber attacks that targeted American and European nuclear power plants and water and electric systems, and could have sabotaged or shut power plants off at will. U.S. officials and private security firms saw the attacks as a signal by Moscow that it could disrupt the West's critical facilities in the event of a conflict. This, the attackers had compromised some operators in North America and Europe by spring 2017 after President Trump was inaugurated. Judith Henk.
So there's a lot we hear in the news, and it can get overwhelming on certain days, and you have to decide what do you pay attention to. This is something worth paying attention to. You know, New York Times reported that Department of Homeland Security reached out to private utilities in this past June. They'd known about this for a while, but that Russian hackers are targeting nuclear power plants, water systems, electric systems, and aviation. They only have to get it right once. And we all know that there are vulnerabilities in terms of computerized protection of these facilities. And even if it's not a nuclear power plant, let's say it's a gas-fired power plant, you shut it down. That's not a simple process, shutting down a big gas-fired power plant. You run the risk of fires and explosions. It's a whole other level if it's a nuclear plant. So this is this investigation, this concern is being led by Homeland Security. I'm very concerned about this. I have little confidence that Rick Perry, the energy secretary, is going to be on top of the details here. Mm-hmm. So this is when the career staff at these agencies are so important. The career staff that the Trump administration is cutting left and right. But they only have to sabotage or shut down one facility, and the health and environmental implications are immense. This is something that I can tell you EPA took very, very seriously when I was there. I've got to hope that they're still taking it seriously. But this is a story to keep your eye on.
I mean, how do you? I mean, well, can there's I, a lot. Of, I'm sorry.
No, I'm gonna. I want you. I want that question on the record. But I also just want to add to it, which is, what is the answer? And given that we're not the only ones at threat here, how do we work with our allies?
Yeah. So the answer, Rich, is first, a strong action against the people who are doing this. This New York Times article says it was Russian operatives who are doing this. So they need to know that they will be held accountable when they do something like this. And then, as Joe said, international cooperation. These are private utilities, right, largely. I mean, some of the water systems are municipally run, like New York City runs a water supply from the Catskills for 8 million people. The power sector is largely privately run. So we're at the mercy of how robust the cyber protections are at literally hundreds of different private utilities all over the country.
This requires a public-private partnership in a crash Apollo-like program that would require the leadership and absolute direction from the president. We're not going to get that. He doesn't believe any of this is real and that any of it is happening, and he doesn't care because he views it within the lens that it impacts him and the election. But this is very serious. It's not just power plants, like you said, and not even a question of coal and nuclear power plants. You know, North Korea, Iran, and even I wrote a book called Hacking ISIS. We saw people in ISIS who had some one or two relatively talented people. You can go to industrial plants, which are creating chemicals, all right, especially down in the Houston area, in the Gulf Coast. And if you turn off certain valves, they will explode. And that will create a wall of toxic chemicals, which will be coming into your communities. So it's chemical warfare by extension. If we don't understand that this stuff is true and could happen, just like they show in the movies, then you're going to have to wait for your mini chemical Pearl Harbor to happen before they take it seriously. But so long as the White House doesn't believe this and climate change doesn't exist, nothing will happen.
So I want to ask you a question. When you say the White House doesn't believe this, I really have issues with this as to whether or not they believe it, or whether they don't believe it, or they do believe it, and they still say our political continuance is more important than something as heinous as what you've just described.
You're right. I should coach that. The president himself doesn't believe anything. I mean, he refuses to read any of his classified intelligence reports, some of which require reading. He gets briefed by Mike Pompeo in a relatively simplistic terms, but it doesn't bring to his attention, the dangers that the nation is in. If I go in there and I say, Mr. President, we have extremely high confidence that Russian intelligence is hacking into power plants, he'll go, power plants. I know some guys who are great guys in power plants, and, they contributed to my campaign. Did you know I had the greatest, number of people at my inauguration? That's just his mindset.
This is probably the kind of information that H.R. McMaster was bringing to the president.
Getting him fired for.
And he didn't want to hear it. And so this is a problem. Also, it's coming from the Russians. And so instantly, Trump seems to have a double standard that he doesn't want to face the reality of the threat.
Well, I think speaking for the private sector, I know for a fact that the private sector, with or without, we could argue about leadership. I obviously don't agree with your guys' view on it, but the private sector, for whatever reason, whether it's because they don't want to lose money or for whatever reason, takes really extraordinary measures with cybersecurity, and
they sometimes fail.
Of course, they sometimes.
I mean, look at all the companies.
Yeah. I'm talking like utilities, and I'm talking about companies that have you know those kind of security concerns. And I would disagree, Malcolm. I think there's a lot of programs going on. And I'll grant you they are early stage, but you look at some of the research going on at DARPA. Or ARPA, whatever they call it now, DARPA, you know, right? Yeah. Because it was DARPA for a while, then it was ARPA, and a lot of that is public-private partnership, and I grant you it's early stage, but these folks are developing all sorts of things on cybersecurity as well as physical security.
But I think we need to be past that. I mean, this is extraordinary that the Homeland Security reached out to the utilities in June. Showed them screenshots of how they were penetrated. Here we are in March, and this wasn't, you know, aggressive reporting by the New York Times or the Washington Post. This was the Department of Homeland Security came out with this alert yesterday.
Right.
I don't think we have time for public-private partnerships.
We got to move on this instantly. This would be a great time for Congress to allocate money, which the industries are always looking for, and say, forget whatever you're doing. We're going to give you a new level of security on top of that. Here's $100 million. Everybody bump up to start taking care of this. Everyone in industry will take that money. But we have to ensure that that money is spent to secure those systems and that we know are insecure. One last point. The most insecure thing that happens in the private sector is a thing called a thumbnail drive, right? Flash drive. You know, some industries, banking and corporate, they have air gaps where their computer systems are not linked to the internet directly.
Yeah, we have that. We don't allow. If I do something as benign as making a presentation somewhere, and they give me the presentation on a thumb drive, if they actually need that at whatever school or whatever I'm thinking, I'm done. We never take that thumb drive back. It's gone. Either they keep it or we dispose of it. Yeah, we and we're a law firm. I mean, we're not, you know, hopefully dealing with these types of issues. But I think there is that recognition. Probably not as robust as what you want it to be. Right.
Just for all the people over 60, 70, a thumb drive is...
Oh, yeah. It's a little device which collects data off of one computer, and you can hand carry it to another one and stick it into a little hole, and that data will transfer to the other computer. It's also a way to get viruses between computers.
Judith is showing us hers.
The computer equivalent of why none of us are shaking hands with Joe today.
It's a sneeze.
Yes, okay. That's right.
I've seen
that particular one looks like a knife. Like, I wouldn't think you could get for airport security.
Yes. It's a knife. It's
all
a compass.
My PowerPoint presentations.
It's a floor wax.
That's
the Trump assault on the environment is on this thumb drive.
It's very nice. I feel like Monty Hall now. Give me $10. I'll give you $100 if you have
a thumb drive in your sad fiber bar if anyone's hungry. You don't want to go in this purse. It's a federal Superfund site.
What's in your pockets? All right. Let's move on here to
rapidly, please.
No, okay. Let's move on to some other stuff, and I want to get to the Canada story. We talked about it just briefly yesterday, but Donald Trump repeating his false claim about Canada after admitting uncertainty over a figure. This came from a speech that he made in St. Louis. And so the article in the Times today says President Trump repeated on Thursday his false assertion that the U.S. runs a trade deficit with Canada the morning after privately telling Republican donors that he had deliberately insisted on that claim in a meeting with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau of Canada without knowing whether it was true. Mr. Trump's private admission to having a loose grasp of the facts and his public refusal to back down from the incorrect statement, the United States has an overall surplus in trade with Canada, were vivid illustrations of the president's cavalier attitude about the truth and a reminder of how that approach has taken hold at the White House. Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the White House press secretary, said Mr. Trump had chosen his figure selectively in the conversation with Mr.
Isn't that an admission?
Isn't that going to be the next alternative fact?
Exactly.
We chose his figures selectively.
Yes.
Yes. Lie.
I selectively.
It may just be on cheese.
I will say, you know, I was, and you're right. You're not actually supposed to be lying about that kind of stuff. I was actually surprised. I run our firm's Canada office, and so which the firm is trying to get me further and further away from the home office. You know,
Montreal
Canada,
is nice.
Yes, right.
Toronto.
But I was surprised. You know, so
they don't want you in Canada, right? You're the only people who still want to be here.
Right. Exactly. We have a lot of statistics on the amount of trade between Canada and New York. Like Canada is like New York's biggest trading partner, actually. Yeah, yeah. New York right. States,
but and New York imports
and
a lot
up until
of
a couple
of
up until a few years ago, there actually was a deficit. And it became a surplus, and I was surprised to hear this too. The difference is I would not lie about it to the Canadian Prime Minister. When energy prices changed, because a lot of what we get from Canada is energy. When energy prices when they tanked, the deficit turned into a surplus because of that mix of materials. But none of which is meant to explain, apologize,
Justin Trudeau isn't he saying this never happened? This encounter never occurred. The really interesting thing about this disturbing story of the president just kind of making stuff up is the dynamic that he said something, he turned to one of his aides, sent him out of the room to fact check. The aide came back and said, yes, boss, essentially, you're right. And that's the dynamic in the White House that really has me nervous, that no one will stand up, not even stand up, but just tell the truth when the president is wrong. And that's when you bring a John Bolton in, that's when it gets just so very disturbing.
Let's just be honest. You cannot believe anything that comes out of this White House. Everything has to be fact-checked, all right? You have a president of the United States who's a pathological liar. And before people go all crazy about that, just last year, the New York Times, right, on January 10th, over 2,000.
That was the Post, I think.
You're right, the Post. Yes. 2,000 false or misleading claims, which could be empirically proven to be lies. And he has no problem with it. You can't believe anything. Therefore, the credibility of the president of the United States is zero. And then we find out that this lie that he talked about may in fact be a lie. Why are we surprised at any of this? How this government can operate with any credibility in a real crisis like Puerto Rico, okay? We saw right there that virtually everything that came out of their mouths was a lie. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a life or death situation for us. And for those who are supporters of this, would you allow your children to do this to you? Would you allow your wife or your husband to lie with such impunity on matters of finance and personal effects? I don't understand how people allow this.
That's right. I didn't.
Well, I wouldn't. Yeah, bar of soap.
I didn't go to that.
A bar of soap.
I didn't go to that party. All right. We have 4 minutes and
try to get through them.
A fistful of waters. Okay.
Okay. Rich has a point. If the Russian meddling was so important, why didn't the Obama administration have a stronger reaction?
They did.
Having Rich, Malcolm, and Judy is one of the best shows.
Hey, Barack Obama in October of 2016 thought it was so serious, he picked up the red phone, the phone which we reserve for crises like atomic war. He called Vladimir Putin personally, told him, we are aware of your operation, and if there are any dabbling with the vote tallies on election day, we will take this as a serious level matter. That phone is reserved for atomic war, okay?
Cool.
So, sounds to me like Obama took it pretty dang seriously. What he didn't do was the decent and honest thing, which was to make it a political issue.
Right.
And I blame him for that. He should have really warned the nation stronger.
He was too respectful and too professional.
That's because he lived in the White House.
Jeff says, Trojan horse, what Russia is doing to the USA through psychological warfare and cyber warfare is the modern day version of the Trojan horse, where Greek soldiers were able to take the city of Troy. When are we going to wake up? Jeff from Colony.
When are we going to wake up?
Absolutely.
Well, we're having a nice talk this morning.
We have to protect Troy. Yeah. I love Troy.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, they take my column every week and they put it on the editorial page, and there's almost no room for anything else.
But didn't we decide off air that RPI needs to do more economic development in Troy?
Come downtown. Absolutely.
That's what we need to do, right?
Build a Trojan horse.
We agree.
Okay, here we go.
All right,
Michael says, power plant, the best defense is a good offense. Why aren't we attacking their facilities?
Because power plant attacks and cyber warfare kills people. You shut off power, incubators go off, respirators go off, people die.
Look at Puerto Rico.
That's right. This is cyber warfare. When you get to that level, that's warfare. Cruise missiles will come back.
Also, more pragmatically, just because we attack them doesn't stop them from attacking us back.
Well, there's that part.
And Lynn says, power plant sabotage, and we didn't know. I'm tired of hearing that power plants have been hacked. Why are we the last to know several months later? And the fact is, we don't get that upset when Trump sits on this information and the money allotted to defend our energy plants, and we know nothing about the threat. If we had known what you were telling us now, we could have acted long ago. I'm disgusted with how long we've been in the dark.
See, I thought there had been reports. I thought there had been reports of
there have been general reports, right? But nothing this specific from Homeland Security.
And since Trump went into office. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go. Good morning, panel. Thank you very much for a great show.
You're welcome.
Again, good morning, panel. please no longer refer to the current president as leader. Leaders usually have a clear vision whether you agree with it or not. And all the current president has shown us is chaos. Okay, panel, says Dan. Trump does not play by the rules while others do. That gives him a big advantage as well as his institutional powers. Don't compare him to other presidents. Dictators.
Dictators. I was going to say Calvin and Hobbes. Okay, this is Calvin ball. You know, there are no rules. You can do whatever you want.
I love Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, is there still a Calvin and
Hobbes? No, Bill Watterson.
Why did he do that?
He retired.
Yeah. But then he kept doing something else.
No.
Their very last cartoon, my daughter always said, the very last cartoon is actually very good. They just, let's go out and, let's go out and take a walk.
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Calvin's father is a patent attorney, by the way.
All right, we have 30 seconds.
Today's discussion. Thanks to the listener who mentioned McMaster being replaced by John Bowles. I heard the same thing. Pardon me. It makes complete sense.
Yosemite Sam.
Okay.
Hello, panel.
Yes.
Remember Jeffrey B. Sessions recused himself from the Russia investigation after being caught in lying at his confirmation hearing in response to a question from Senator Al Franken. He denied any meetings with the Russians, which was exposed as a falsehood very soon after he made the recusal statement, and that's Ray from West Hurley. And the last one, Joe, if I may.
What's the intelligence level of that combined conversation?
All right, here we go. We have 10 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. War with Iran panel. What if Russia put troops in Iran? Wouldn't it be just like putting troops in South Korea to forestall military?
We're out of time. Thank you very much. Please.
Wow, we really ground to a stop there, didn't we?
Please tip your waiters and waitresses. Good night.